Following podcast will contain spoilers and explicit language. Hello and welcome to episode 89 of
Yeah, It's That Bad.
My name is Joel.
I'm Martin.
And I'm Kevin.
This is the show that usually looks at supposedly bad movies and asks the question, is it really that bad? But tonight we're taking a break and for the start of the spooky Halloween season.
This is right in that theme because this movie scared the crap out of me.
This raised questions that I thought that I had put to bed a long time ago.
So instead, welcome to
Yeah, It's That Good.
This is a show that looks at supposedly good movies and asks the question, is it really that good? And what that boils down to is that we look at movies that are fresh on Rotten Tomatoes and reevaluate that score. Does it really deserve to be that high? Tonight's movie is 1975's The Rocky Horror Picture Show, directed by Jim Sharman, starring Tim Curry, Susan Sarandon, Barry Bostwick, Richard O'Brien, Patricia Quinn, Neil Campbell, Jonathan Adams, Peter Hinwood, Meatloaf, and Charles Gray. The Rocky Horror Picture Show is the 1975 film adaptation of the British rock musical stage play, The Rocky Horror Show, written by Richard O'Brien. This film currently holds a 76%. On Rotten Tomatoes. How about a plot synopsis?
Brad and Janet, newly engaged, stumble onto the castle of Dr. Frankenfurter during a rainstorm. Taking refuge in the castle, they're present for the doctor's unveiling of his newest creation, Rocky. Over the course of the night, Frank seduces both Brad and Janet. Janet and Rocky become involved biblically. Dr. Everett Scott arrives looking for his son, Eddie. It's his nephew, whom Frank killed earlier in the film. And it all goes to pot when the guests discover that Frank is actually an alien, a transvestite from the planet Transsexual in the galaxy Transylvania, who succeeded in creating the sonic transducer and audio vibratory physio-molecular transport device capable of breaking down solid matter and then projecting it through space and, who knows, perhaps even time itself.
Okay, Rocky Horror Picture Show. Tonight's episode was sponsored by Caitlin. Caitlin writes in and says, "Hi guys, I'm really glad I could help support the show as I've been a fan for a long time. My choice is a bit unusual as the Rocky Horror Picture Show actually has a rating of 76% on Rotten Tomatoes. But hear me out. The reason I chose it is because the movie is extremely polarizing. People either love it or they hate it. There doesn't seem to be much in between. I myself love this movie and have gone countless times to see the midnight showing in my area to enjoy it with other fans. This movie is pure camp with great rock and roll songs. I believe it is only highly rated as it is because people have looked back on it fondly. When this movie was first released, it bombed, and it wasn't until later, when the cult following started to do midnight shows, that it took off. It's my belief that the movie can still stand on its own. But if you do get a chance to see this at a midnight showing in New York, take it. Hope you enjoy it as much as I do, and love it for its bad taste and campiness. Take care and expect more sponsorships to come from me, Caitlin." Okay, guys, Rocky Horror Picture Show. What is your history with this?
I've seen this movie countless times, and I like it a lot. I actually dislike musicals, especially in movie form, but this is one that I really enjoy seeing, and it just gets better for me every time I watch it.
I've never seen this. I hate musicals in all forms. I did notice that there was a midnight showing of this about 2 weeks ago in our area.
They perpetually have midnight showings of this in New York.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've never seen this. I had no interest in it.
You want to go to the midnight show?
Nope.
You get to throw rice.
Yeah, you get to do stuff. At it.
The audience gets involved.
Great.
Okay, as for me,
just like this show.
Okay, as for me, I saw this movie back when I was a prenatal fetus. So I was not prepared.
That's not going anywhere, is it?
For it.
Where you were a pre-posthumous prenatal fetus.
Yeah, exactly. I was not prepared for this movie. As a young boy, I was like, what is this? You know, this is not a movie a young buck should be watching. It just doesn't make any sense. It's weird, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's just bizarre. This is the kind of movie that if I was watching it and my mom walked in while I was watching it, there'd be some questions, right?
You'd have to pull your pants up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
there'd
of course.
Be some questions.
Naturally.
Yeah. Some statutory questions.
Questions demanded by law.
Okay, let's do what we always do at the top of the show. We'll discuss the actors one by one, and we'll see how you thought they did. Okay, first up, Tim Curry. I think this might be his first movie.
Yeah, this is his first movie on his IMDb page, which I'm on every day, all day.
Constantly checking for updates.
Yeah, I just want to know what Tim's working on.
By the way, my first encounter with Tim Curry, E.T. the Extraterrestrial Ride at Disney World. Anyone who's ridden that knows what I'm talking about, but go on.
What's my first experience with Tim Curry? It was probably this movie. I love Tim Curry. He's awesome. This is my favorite movie that he's in.
He was amazing in this movie. Regardless of what anyone who hates this movie says, I mean, you have to admit, this guy is great in this role. He's amazing. It's worth seeing just to see this guy.
It's so over the top and insane.
It is.
But in a good way, right? Like, that's the point.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's real easy to point out people as being good actors when they're over the top characters. But
Daniel Day-Lewis?
Yeah. He owned this role completely. I mean, he was amazing.
He lived this role. The type of actor. He lived
his personal life.
He became a transsexual.
Yeah.
No, when it comes down to acting, this is not usual movie acting. This is theatrical acting in a movie, and he hit a home run with it.
Look, I don't know any other actor that could have bent his gender
as hard as he did, right?
I mean, he treated his gender like it was a Stretch Armstrong, and it never once broke. Any other actor's gender would have completely broken from this much bending.
I don't even know what Tim Curry is. He couldn't have been human. And then it's explained later in the movie that he's not, so...
Would you say he's more human than human?
Superhuman gender bending was going on.
He was good. He's fun. I mean, when you don't know what to expect, it takes a second to like get used to this guy.
Mm-hmm. What
he's playing. But once you like roll with the punches and you get into it, like you study like the little nuances of the stuff he does, like the way he just like he'll pause and he's constantly looking at the camera,
yeah,
and like chewing up like his words, and it's really over the top. Yeah, it's a really fun performance. I can understand why people really like this performance of this guy. Like, mm-hmm. I get it. Next up, a young, nubile Susan Sarandon.
Her boobs.
That's where you're going?
We're a perfect 10 out of 10. I don't know where else to go. I mean, singing and acting wise was great. You know, she's a great actress. But her, oh my God, they were the nicest boobs I've ever seen.
I think Susan Sarandon must have taken some sort of potion when she was young to like slow her aging or something, because she looked old then, or rather I should say, like, she looks like the way she does now then, and just kind of stayed that way for a really long time.
The Hollywood magic.
Yeah, but what do you have to say about her boobs?
Yeah, they're amazing.
Maybe you didn't watch this when you were a kid in the same way that I did.
You know, normally I might edit out the TikTok, but it's actually like this movie kind of forces it on you, right?
No, you have to. It's like a huge
part. It's part of the movie.
Especially the end scene, because they're coming out.
95% of her screen time was her just in a bra.
Not only that, she's getting fondled.
Did you see this alone or with your wife?
Mostly alone.
She couldn't handle it.
She would kind of come in every once in a while, see what I was doing.
It's too much gender bending for
her. Yeah, she couldn't handle it.
Did you bring in a box of tissues with you?
Okay, next up, Barry Bostwick.
He was the hero.
Yeah, Brad.
Yeah, he was pretty good. I liked him.
I liked him a lot, actually, yeah.
I like his awkwardness. I think it was done really well. That's what his character demanded, and I'm just going to lay it out and paint everybody with the same brush besides Tim Curry. Everybody else was supporting Tim Curry in this movie.
Absolutely.
But they all did great.
Even Meatloaf?
No, Meatloaf is his own entity.
And one more person I want to point out is Richard O'Brien. Like, he wrote like the songs, and he sings the opening song and all that stuff. That guy was really good. I liked him as the riffraff character. Anytime Tim Curry would say something, he had this look on his face, just like...
What an asshole.
Yeah, like that. Like the hell with this guy. Like, he had this smirk on his face. I really liked the little subtle stuff that he was doing. He was really good. Okay, that's pretty much it, right? There's nobody else that's tickling your fancy here?
They all tickled my fancy throughout the entire movie.
Okay, let's get into the history of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. The film is a parody of B-movies, science fiction, and horror films of the late 1940s through the early 1970s. Director Jim Sharman collaborated on the screenplay with O'Brien, who wrote both the book and lyrics for the stage. The film introduces Tim Curry and features Susan Sarandon and Barry Bostwick, along with cast members from the original King's Road production, presented at the Royal Court Theatre, London, in 1973. The film is considered to be the longest-running release in film history. It has never been pulled by 20th Century Fox from its original 1975 release, and it continues to play in cinemas. Some cinemas showing the film have run it for decades at a time. There are two basic versions of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, known as the US and UK releases. The UK version contains the original version of superheroes. The US version, created after the film hit the midnight circuit, omits superheroes, as the studio thought it was too depressing. A new stereo print struck in 1990, which included superheroes, and most US theaters which play the film now run this version, which is similar to the UK release, although the sound mix is slightly different than the original mono print. The film opened in the US at the USA Theater in Westwood, Los Angeles on August 14, 1975. It did well at that location, but not elsewhere. The cult following did not begin until the film began its midnight run at the Waverly Theater in New York on April 1st, 1976.
I think it's still playing there, actually.
Before the success of the midnight screenings, the film was withdrawn from its 8 opening cities due to very small audiences. Its planned New York opening on Halloween night was canceled. Fox re-released it around college campuses on a double bill with another rock music film parody, Brian De Palma's Phantom of the Paradise, but again, it drew small audiences, with Pink Flamingos and Kevin's favorite movie, Reefer Madness, making money in midnight showings nationwide. Rocky Horror Picture Show was eventually screened at midnight, starting in New York City on April Fool's Day. By that Halloween, people were attending in costume and talking back to the screen. By the mid-1978, Rocky Horror Picture Show was playing over 50 locations on Fridays and Saturdays at midnight. Newsletters were published by local performance groups and fan gatherings for Rocky Horror Picture conventions. By the end of 1979, there were twice weekly screenings at over 230 theaters. This would subsequently create a cult following of the film, in which audience participation became a standardized practice at its screens. There are many aspects and levels to participating at a showing of this movie. Many people just yell at the screen, while others go much deeper. Many people develop over time into diehard fans. During the song Time Warp, in many theaters, nearly everyone stands up and does the dance. Costumes, props, and verbal dialogue are all tools in participating. What were ad-lib responses, more commonly known as callbacks by followers, from audiences are now in few locales as tightly scripted as a screenplay. Audience members who provide incorrect or poorly timed responses may find themselves angrily shouted down, just as they were being disruptive in a normal movie. However, creative new lines are usually applauded and even added to the local repertoire. During select moments of the film, audience members will use select props they had brought for the film. For instance, when Brad and Janet start running in the rain, some audience members will fire off loaded water pistols into the air, while others cover their heads with newspaper, as Janet does in this scene. Many fans will fling toast into the air when the line, "A toast!" is said, and they'll toss Scott brand toilet paper at the line, "Great Scott!" And playing cards are often thrown when Frankenfurter sings the line, "Cards for sorrow, cards for pain," in I'm Going Home. In cinemas where the film plays on a regular or semi-regular basis, group of fans have formed casts. These casts act out the movie on a stage, or on the floor in front of the movie screen, or even behind it for ghostly effects. Typically, a showing that uses a shadow cast will include a pre-show ritual that involves calling attention to anyone who hasn't seen the film in a theater. Those who haven't experienced Rocky Horror live are considered virgins, often having a V marked on their foreheads with red lipstick. Depending on the theater and shadow cast, virgins will be called out, mocked, made fun of, usually in a good-natured but vulgar way, and encouraged to participate in party tricks and games that might be considered racy or demeaning. 35 years later, Glee the Music, the Rocky Horror Glee Show, debuted at number 6 on the Billboard 200 the week of October 27, 2010, with 48,000 copies sold. The music came from an episode of the TV show Glee, which recreated several scenes from the Rocky Horror Picture Show, including the opening credits, and featured Barry Boswick and Meatloaf in cameo roles. Finally, in 2005, the film was selected for preservation in the United States National Film Registry by the Library of Congress as being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. Okay, so the movie initially cost $1.4 million. How much has it made worldwide, given the fact that it's been in continual run since 1975?
I don't know, $600 million?
$150 million.
Ah, Kevin's a little more frugal. $139 million. Okay, the Rocky Horror Picture Show. First up, what version did you guys watch?
I saw the American version.
Yeah, when I popped in the DVD, it made me pick, like, UK or US. I'm like, I don't know, US, I guess.
USA.
USA.
All right, okay, all right. These colors don't run. This movie starts off in not typical Yes, That Bad fashion. Very different.
I have never in my life seen a movie open this way.
I've never in my life experienced a movie that had an actual artistic opening that stands on its own merit and is entertaining.
So the opening shot of this movie is really iconic.
Yeah.
It's an extreme close-up on a woman's pair of lips, red lipstick, and she's singing this song. And it's silhouetted, it's all black around her, and it's just lips floating in space, singing and dancing. What'd you think, Kevin?
It was cool, but it went on forever.
It just
kept going and going and going. It was cool at first, and then after a while, I fast-forwarded.
I like this. It was really good to get everybody's name on there. Like, it, I don't know, it was theatrical, which is what they're going for, and I thought it was creepy. I mean, that just floating pair of teeth and lips, that's creepy.
It's my favorite song in the movie.
Really?
This first one, yeah.
Yeah, you know what? It is one of my favorites as well.
The giant lips are singing this song about B-movies from the past and campy movies and stuff. I kind of like this a lot because if you sit there and you actually listen to what she's singing, actually
Richard
yeah,
O'Brien.
Richard O'Brien is actually singing this.
Yeah.
He's talking about like these campy old movies. So it's setting you up for what it is that we're going to watch, which I like that. Because if you're not paying attention, like that might go over your head.
Yeah.
But I like that. It puts things into context, what we're about to see. Like, we're not going to see a real straight-laced movie.
Not even close.
Nowhere near it. Immediately after this, we get a wedding scene. Kevin is our resident expert on weddings. What'd you think?
This reminded me exactly of my wedding day.
It was pinpoint,
right?
Exactly, right?
Yeah,
right?
I think so.
Did you like the farmer and his wife in the back there?
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
It's American Gothic.
Yeah. Not only that, they had Tim Curry standing in the back.
Was he the priest?
No.
He was like a lurch-looking guy, super tall.
He was just standing at the very top of the steps, and they had the entire cast. I really liked that. It was kind of like a casting call in the beginning of the movie before they actually start the story.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
So the DVD that I watched has all these special features on it where there's a secondary audio track where you can listen to the audience participation stuff that they recorded in some theater somewhere. Mm. And it's just like a wall of sound, people screaming simultaneously. You can barely hear it. But every once in a while, they will in unison all say the same thing. Mm-hmm. And in this scene, there was a lot of funny stuff that they were saying. Like, the procedure when you see this movie is that whenever anyone says the name Brad, you're supposed to scream asshole. And when they say Janet, you say slut. So that gets tossed out a million times during this song because they're constantly saying their names back and forth to each other.
I've seen this in the theater, and the one that I saw it in, during the wedding scene, people brought rice to the theater.
What about ricin?
Yeah, they
were poisoning each other.
Yeah, they had blow dart guns. They're just shooting it at each other.
It's Susan Sarandon and her boyfriend, Brad. They're at this wedding. And immediately after the wedding is over, the bride tosses her bouquet over her shoulder and Susan Sarandon catches it. That seems to be breaking with protocol, right, Kevin? Isn't that from the reception?
I don't really know, to be honest.
What if you don't have a reception? What if it's
What
if it's 1975 and you're getting in your car driving to the honeymoon?
I mean, these are simpler times, right?
Yeah.
Weddings weren't the gigantic ordeal they are today.
You're trying to tell me that this is pre-wedding planner Jennifer Lopez era?
Yes. It's pre-Say Yes to the Dress. It's pre-David Tatera.
What about 27 Dresses?
This isn't pre-Bridezilla.
Yeah, definitely pre-Bridezilla. This is simpler times. I mean, you get it in the quote when our hero is talking about the bride. He says, Betty, she's a wonderful little cook.
Yeah.
That's her one redeeming characteristic as a future wife.
I almost want to go to this, the midnight screening of this, just for this. The stuff that they do during this scene is really funny because there's a part in it where the Barry Boswick and some guy are talking. There's a guy with a camera in the background. And he turns around and takes a picture of Barry Boswick. But before that happens, everyone just starts screaming, hey, you, turn around, turn around. And then he turns around and takes a picture and then everyone cheers. So, yeah, like that kind of stuff is pretty fun. So this movie begs the question, is the movie itself good or is like the fun activities that surround it what make it good?
I enjoy this movie on its own. I saw it on VHS before I saw it in the theater.
I see this movie as very similar to Buckaroo Banzai. Like, they are on the same level almost. Like,
yep.
These super culty things. Even though they're a decade apart from each other, they're still hitting the same kind of weird niche audience stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's not referencing such a specific era.
It is. It's referencing like the old movies.
Yeah, from the 40s to the early 70s. That's like a
They're both parodies of whatever, right? I can understand why people like Rocky Horror as opposed to Buckaroo Banzai. So, because it has songs in it.
The
question
is, if Buckaroo Banzai was released in 1975 and the distributor had kept it going and tried to have midnight showings, would it have become what the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Can you guys follow a narrative in Rocky Horror?
Kind of.
I can follow a narrative. I know what Dr. Frankenfurter wants. I know what he wants. I know what the problem is. I know who the hero is.
I don't know what he wants.
He wants to have sex with everybody.
After the wedding, they had their song and dance number. This is my favorite song number two in the movie. So far, this movie's got me. I like the music in this. Song number one is really good. Song number two, this Damn It Janet song. I like it a lot. Yeah, it's funny.
It's pretty good. I'm like the all-time hater of musicals, and it's still holding my attention.
You like them in the back where they're like, Janet.
Yeah, I like that a lot. That's really good.
It's actually funny. I like how they're setting up like a funeral while he's proposing to her. They're like putting the casket in. There's like a lot of funny things in the scenery in this movie too. Right after he realizes that he wants to get married to her while they're walking through a cemetery, he proposes to her on the steps. But right before that, there's like a heart, like his love in the middle of the cemetery in the background. I find stuff like that like very funny, like this dichotomy.
They had an extreme level of detail this movie that has to be applauded. It's refreshing to see that much effort being put into a movie.
I'd go as far as say that it's like Hitchcock level of like specific.
Rocky Horror Picture Show is Hitchcockian.
It's definitely Cockian.
Okay, so our two heroes, they decide to, I gotta admit, I didn't know what the hell they decided to do when I first saw this movie, because I was like, where are they going? What are they doing? But I wasn't paying attention enough, because for my subsequent research doing the notes and stuff, I listened to the soundtrack again a couple times, and they pretty much explain everything that's going on in this movie in the songs. Yeah. Like, the songs drive the narrative forward.
Yeah.
Where are they going, Kevin? In their car, in the rain.
They're going to see, like, their old science teacher.
Yeah, I did not pick that up at all.
Yeah, I was able
Dr.
to follow
Scott.
That.
Yeah. But they even show the map on the road. It shows, like, the different, like, evil doctors that are on that road. There's three of them. Dr. Frankenfurter is like the second one. They need to go to the third one.
It's interesting that you bring that up, though, because you do need to listen to the words of the songs to understand what's happening. And with each song, I found it more and more difficult follow what they were saying.
Completely.
To the point where at the end, the last song, I have no idea what they were saying. I really have no idea.
All right, so they're driving their car in the rain, and this is the classic horror movie setup where the car breaks down, they have a flat tire, and they have to run to the nearest house to get some help, to use the phone.
Nearest castle.
So they run in the rain to the castle to use the phone, which is funny because the other day I rewatched another Tim Curry classic, Clue, where this exact same thing happens to somebody in the rain, their car breaks down, and they come and they meet Tim Curry in a house. Let me tell you something, that movie does not hold up.
Clue? No, it doesn't.
It does not hold up.
This movie, on the other hand.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
Yeah.
So when they finally get into this house, they meet Riff Raff and these other characters. He's like this weird, bald, hunchback, weirdo, loner guy. Yep. Loved him. He's great. And it's right here where they break out into the next song, which is Time Warp. And I stopped and I thought to myself, like, it's amazing. A lot of the songs in this thing have bled into popular culture. Like, I've heard Time Warp a billion times.
They play it on the radio.
Even the first song, the science fiction double feature, I've heard that elsewhere.
Yeah.
The Time Warp song is the only one that I recognized having heard before.
So, Kevin, what'd you think of the Time Warp?
I like this song. This is good. I'm still 100% with this movie.
Me too.
Do you like how they cut back and forth to the guy that's like explaining the story? He's like, first you gotta jump to the left.
Okay,
I loved it.
Okay, all right, so there's this narrator character who just pops into the movie. He's like a criminologist, and he just popping in and like telling us what's happening. When he first came up, I was like, this is awful, this is very stupid, and it's very theatrical. That's what it felt like. This is the kind of crap somebody in the theater would walk out and like say that. It was awful. I hated it so much. But then he redeemed himself completely when he would pop in the middle of the time warp and like tell you how to do the dance.
Yep.
That's pretty good, right?
I think he redeemed himself. I think he just got better throughout the movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Did you notice that he had no neck?
Yeah, he was...
That's one of the things people scream at this movie about. Where's your neck? What are you doing? Because he's like this weird stubby neck guy.
He's just a chubster.
So once the time warp is over, we finally get our first glimpse at Tim Curry.
Tim Curry comes down in a elevator
shaft
from his laboratory. He looks like a radiant golden god.
Kevin, why don't you describe his appearance to those who haven't seen this movie?
Well, he's got this long, curly hair.
Look, you can go ahead and say it. Luxurious.
Borderline afro.
Yeah.
Perm?
Okay.
Yeah, yes. It was definitely a perm.
Yeah.
He's got full on makeup, like makeup to
Kabuki.
The extreme.
Yeah, he's got a lot of eyeshadow, eyeliner.
Yeah, I've never seen that much eyeliner in my life.
His face is white, lipstick.
Yep.
It's over the lipstick. Top.
That's the best and worst description for this, right? Over the top. You don't know what that looks like, but once you see it, it's like, yep, yeah, I get it. It's over the top.
What's he wearing?
He's wearing a corset. He's wearing black lingerie underwear.
Fishnet stockings.
With fishnet stockings that have straps
high heels.
That connect to his corset. And high heels, black high heels. And this guy has practice, I guess, walking in high heels because he does it very well.
He's a pro at it.
When we saw Wild Wild West, we thought we saw the true limits of gender bending.
We did.
We were such fools.
So naive.
I don't think, I mean...
Slap a red V on my forehead.
Yeah. I would go as far to say that Tim Curry bent his gender all the way around and back again.
Multiple times.
And he's still alive to talk about it.
I'm not even sure he has a gender to bend.
It's gone? He lost it.
He bent it too much. His performance was so impressive. I mean, that guy had to sing,
yeah.
Dance in high heels, and he had to be like a villain, but likable at the same time.
That's true. That's a good point.
I mean, I can't even imagine what was going through his head when someone offered him this role. I mean,
opportunity of a lifetime.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, you got to give that guy credit just for attempting this, let alone nailing it the way he does.
The guy's real deal, man. He's a real deal actor.
He is.
Well, he's singing this song about him being a sweet, transsexual, transvestite from Transylvania. You gotta love the alliteration, right?
Right up our alley.
Yeah, it's that bad classic.
I like this song. I like Tim Curry's intro song, and I like the way that he interacts with Susan Sarandon.
I think it's around this point where the movie starts to lose me, starting to waver. Not the gender bending stuff. Like, I can accept a little gender bending, you know? It's all right. But this movie starts to get real muddled real fast, I think.
It's still holding me, actually.
Yeah, I'm holding strong.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. For me, this is like the decline. Like, the songs aren't hitting me as hard as they were before. Mm-hmm. And after this, there aren't that many other songs that I like.
Yeah, I would agree with that, yeah. But the movie itself is still holding my attention. I still want to know what's going on here.
Okay, so after that, he removes our hero's clothing.
Yeah, they get just stripped down.
What'd you think of that? I did not expect that.
Why did they just like stand there and accept it? They're just like, all right, they're gonna take her clothes off.
Susan Sarandon and Barry Bostwick are just standing there, and two of the characters come up and just unzip his fly, pull his pants off, and they're running around the rest of the movie in their underwear. Yeah.
Listen, this is simpler times when molesters had carte blanche on everyone.
Yeah, boys will be boys.
Yeah,
or sure. Girls. Boys will be girls.
Boys will be girls. Will be boys. You know? I know.
Well, we get to see what Tim Curry's doing. He's supposed to be like a Frankenstein parody, right?
Frankenfurter.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be, he's a meat. He's a piece of meat.
Like, you know, he's Dr. Dracula Frankenstein.
Yeah, it's when we got to this point where that's when it dawned on me, like, oh, okay, I get it. He's supposed to be like this perverted Dr. Frankenstein thing, yeah. Right? Like, why would I assume that? I don't remember anything about this movie.
Same
I told
Dr.
you.
Dr. Frankenfurter.
I was a prenatal fetus when I saw this movie. I don't remember anything. But when we got to this point, that's when it kind of hit me. I was like, oh, okay, I get it. He's supposed to be like this sick, twisted, perverted version of Frankenstein.
This vampire is also very similar to the vampire in Van Helsing.
Martin, they don't call him Vamp because he's a vampire.
They call him Vamp because he's bisexual. Thank you.
Two people will get that. So, Kevin, what's his master plan? What's his scheme? What's this whole movie about?
That's a really good question.
He's just trying to get his Frankenfurter everywhere he can.
Yeah, so Dr. Frankenfurter, Tim Curry, he has developed the means to create life, to create a man, basically to create a Frankenstein monster, except...
What does he use to create life?
It looked like the kind of liquid you put like in a frozen icy or something, like...
Yeah, but what were the colors?
Rainbow colors?
Yeah, it was very rainbow. I caught that.
Yeah, he's using gay pride to...
He also has juice. He also had the triangle on his
He did,
dress.
And there was also a triangle on the elevator shaft, so like it brings you up into his laboratory where he does his...
So
it's definitely in there. You can check it.
He creates his own Frankenstein's monster, but instead of it being a monster, it's a 5 out of 5 beefcake.
Yeah, the world's greatest beefcake.
Straight out of like the Abercrombie catalog.
That guy had abs for days, I thought.
He had 6 trillion abs.
He really did. His abs had abs.
He had abs on his arms.
His biceps had triceps.
So when this Adonis is born, he immediately, like, jump cuts to him being in the tank and him jumping 10 trillion feet into the air, grabbing a chandelier, and he starts singing. I thought this was really jarring. And it undercuts a problem I have with this movie, where there's no transition into anything. They just, like, do stuff.
Yeah.
There's nothing smooth about this movie. They just, like, cut, 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 and then they're singing songs and nothing in between.
Well, that's why they interject with that guy who's telling the story. He breaks the scenes up.
You have to remember that, like, transitions are not going to be as fluid in a movie that's made from something that's portrayed in theater.
It's not as fluid as Tim Curry's gender in this movie.
Nothing's as fluid as Tim Curry's gender in this movie. But this is a musical, so you're going to get people that are going to have their narration and their acting, and then jump straight into a musical number.
I understand that, but I would like a little smoother transition into the musical number. I don't know. I don't think that's too much to ask.
I think that's too much to ask for me.
You're asking too much.
Yeah, you're right. I'm outrageous.
You're out of line.
I've lost it.
You are out of order.
So yeah, this big oiled up beefcake guy, he's running around, he's singing. And then I don't know I really don't understand what happens, but all of a sudden a freezer door opens.
Yeah, that's where he's stored his first failed attempt.
And Meatloaf comes out.
Yeah, Meatloaf bursts through. I hate this part.
Me too.
I hate it.
This is the beginning of the end for me.
So Tim Curry murders Meatloaf.
I laughed out loud the way this is shot, like him running around with a pickaxe and attacking him.
His name is Robert Paulson.
His name?
It really is.
He didn't have a name when he came out of the freezer, but after Tim Curry killed him, he became Robert Paulson.
when this is all said and done, this movie just completely spirals down the tubes. It just doesn't. It's so muddled.
I'm holding on because I still understand the story.
Now it's at this point where I wrote down: was I supposed to take some kind of hallucinatory drug before I watch this movie?
Yes,
because it's completely lost to me. I don't get it anymore. As soon as Meatloaf shows up, it's just a steady decline.
It's at this point that Dr. Frankenfurter goes into his honeymoon suite with Rocky.
Oh yeah. I did not remember this, so he has implied gay sex with this boy beef that he created.
He has...
Reminds me of Splice.
Explicit, implicit, explosive sex with Rocky.
Who's chained to the bed?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's rape.
Yeah.
Lovemaking. Violent lovemaking.
Forceful, violent lovemaking.
Forceful, violent, non-consensual lovemaking. At which point... Susan Sarandon and Barry Bostwick they're shown to their separate quarters, because if there's one thing Dr. Frankenfurter respects is the sanctity of virginity and marriage, mm-hmm. even though he's just raped somebody.
I gotta admit though, I thought this stuff right here was awesome.
I like this too. Yeah.
I laughed out loud at this stuff. This is phenomenal. So explain what happened here.
Essentially, they're being voyeured in separate bed chambers and
from another dimension with voyeuristic intentions. You know a thing about that.
Of course I do. So they go into their bed and it shows a drape that is, it's essentially like a pink colored mosquito net, and it allows you to see the silhouette of Susan Sarandon and Bostwick. Sarandon is woken up by what looks like Barry Bostwick. They start making
it is him. Voice is him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know that for sure, because all I can see is a silhouette. They start making out, getting hot and heavy. You know, maybe some Frank and Beans are coming out.
Some heavy petting.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, a wig falls off, and it's Tim Curry.
It's so funny. I was laughing out loud at that. The stuff that he was saying to her is cracking me up. So it's set up that Susan Sarandon is a virgin. She doesn't want to have sex. She's saving herself. She's super puritanical. That's where the comedy comes from, for her being such a tight-ass, stuck-up person. But she falls for Frankenfurter. He seduces her, and they have sex. Raunchy sex. 5 seconds later... we see Susan Sarandon enter Barry Boswick's room, and they're about to have sex, but then,
it's Dr. Frankenfurter again.
What I like about this is that...
he says literally the exact same thing, verbatim.
I thought this was so funny, man. This was so good. Funny.
The best is how, like, this alarm starts going off, because Rocky, in the meantime, has broken free of his...
He's trying to get raped all the time.
Yeah, he's had enough. He can't stand it anymore. He escapes. They set the dogs on Rocky. So this alarm goes off while Dr. Frankenfurter is having an intimate moment with Barry Bostwick.
Yeah, that's gay sex number two.
Right. I don't know if there's any penetration going on here. I think there's just some dome happening.
It was wild. When I was watching this last night, I was like, Jesus Christ. I watched as a kid. Like, I wonder what I thought back then. I didn't like this movie when I was a kid. Maybe this is why. I'm like, oh, what is this? What's going on here? What is this?
Well, you cry every time you have sex now. And
yeah, Martin has firsthand experience. What am I talking about?
We both cry and hold each other.
I'm so sorry. I'll never leave you. Kevin, what are our homoerotic levels at?
They're off the chart.
We usually skirt the line on this show. We go back and forth.
Right? Man.
In this movie, it's unavoidable, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is...
But usually, the homoeroticism scale, it's really jiggling it towards the high level because of the things we say. This is just from watching this, right? We don't even have to say anything.
Okay, so Susan Sarandon, she's got a taste of the hot dog, and she wants to go back to the barbecue to get some more. She goes down to Dr. Frankenfurter's laboratory, and Rocky's in there crying like a baby because he was just raped.
And as we learned from Saw, only babies cry.
That's a fact. He's crying like a baby. He's under some type of tarp, I guess. It's not a blanket.
Toxic acid relief.
Yeah, he's underneath billions of dollars. Susan Sarandon seduces him.
Touch me, touch me, touch me, touch me.
Touch me.
Susan Sarandon has a line in here that I loved. Heavy petting leads to seat wetting.
Whoa.
Whoa.
That's good. That's real good.
The best is, okay, so this scene, you know, ends with them sleeping with each other. Everybody is then brought into the laboratory. This is the most ridiculous scene in this movie where it's like, Susan!
Barry!
Barry!
Susan! Barry!
Rocky!
Susan!
Barry!
Doctor!
And,
Rocky!
And
doctor?
No, Rocky doesn't say anything. He's just like, staring.
And they looped that like 1,000 times, right?
3,000 times.
I feel like that's something that we would do if we made a movie. It would just be like, Susan! Rocky!
Well, apparently, there's an unwanted guest at the front door. Some guy in a wheelchair.
Dr. Scott.
I like this. Riff Rev is like, you know this earthling?
Oh, stop!
It's like a subtle hint as to what's going on in this movie. Apparently, they're not people. Dr. Frankenfurter is not a human being. He's an alien. He's not an actual transvestite. He's from like the universe transvestite.
No, he's from the universe. He's from the galaxy Transylvania.
From the planet transvestite. Yeah, there you go.
Or transsexual.
Mm-hmm. Which kind of puts a weird spin on it. So he's not really a gender bender because you have to be a human being to bend your gender, right?
That's true. All
right, so this guy's in a wheelchair. They push a button and he magically flies through walls and he ends up here. This movie has lost me now.
It's a magnet.
Well, they had this long protracted dinner scene where...
So boring.
So boring, yeah. And it's this new guy, Dr. Scott, he's there looking for his nephew, Meatloaf. Where's Meatloaf? And they're eating this dinner. And he's like, where's my nephew? It's like, that's a tender subject. They're eating him, apparently, I think is the implication.
Mm. Absolutely.
And then he rips off the covers of the table, and there's a hot, fresh corpse rotting away beneath them. It's Meatloaf. Ta-da.
Ta-da.
Oh, that was him? That was supposed to be him?
Yeah. I assumed it was him.
I was so confused.
Absolutely.
I was so bored. At this point, I was just like, I can't do this anymore.
How could you be bored with this movie?
I'm done.
Yeah, actually, I'm on his side. Around this point, I was like, all right, get this over with. End it. You lost me.
Yeah.
I was with it when they were doing all this stuff in the beginning, but this movie has completely lost its focus, and what happens now is just pointless crap.
I was checking how much time was left in the movie, like every 5 minutes.
Yeah, me too. 40 minutes left. Oh.
I was encapsulated into the story and plot in this movie the entire time.
Well, then they flick a switch and he activates his Medusa ray and everyone gets turned into a naked statue. Like that part?
I love that part.
This movie is just falling apart. Spiraling out of control.
Listen, I like that part because I knew at any moment they're gonna have to go for the floor show. And that's my favorite part of this whole goddamn movie.
Well, before they get turned back to human, even the statues start gender bending because the statues are wearing women's clothing. And then he turns on the de-Medusa-izing ray and they're all gender bending on stage and dancing and stuff. The one girl has the most extreme nip slip in history.
Oh yeah, but I don't think it's a slip. I think that it's like, she's just dancing. They're coming out. Susan Sarandon has them slipping a little bit too in that number if you look, which I do.
With a fine tooth comb.
Yes, I look with a fine tooth magnifying glass.
Kevin, what do you think of this floor show part when they're dancing on stage and singing in?
Boobs are flying everywhere.
Kevin, don't dream it. Be it. Good advice.
They just start singing this song and dancing this choreographed number. A lot of the songs up to this point, obviously everyone knew the words, so it's unrealistic, but it kind of flowed that people would just kind of pop into the song and continue the song, and it made sense. This was just a choreographed stage production that somehow they all knew what to do and what to say. I was done. I was really done at this point. I had enough. I'm ready to pack it in.
End this, please. Get this over with. I can't take it anymore.
There's like an underwater orgy.
Oh, yeah. The underwater orgy. Fidelio. Well, that's... Yeah, well, to make a long story short, they kill Frankenfurter. They kill Rocky. They kill... everybody dies. The three main heroes, Susan Sarandon, Barry Boswick, and the doctor guy... they escape, and then the entire mansion floats away into heaven, or whatever.
At which point, we get the narrator with my favorite line in the whole movie. Lost in time, lost in space, are the insects, the human race.
Yeah, real poignant ending to this thing. And then it ends, the end, and we get one last little song at the end, and that's it. That's the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Eh.
Okay, let's find out what the real critics have to say about this movie. Most of the jokes that might have seemed jolly fun on stage now appear obvious and even flat. The sparkle's gone. Variety. The wit is too weak to sustain a film, and the songs all sound the same. Dave Kerr, Chicago Reader. And finally, viewed on video simply as a movie, without the midnight sideshow, it's cheerful and silly and kind of sweet and forgettable. Roger Ebert, Chicago Sun-Times. Okay, guys, this movie currently holds a 76% on Rotten Tomatoes, but is it really that good?
I think that this movie is better than a 76%. I think the acting is unbelievable. The cinematography is great. The story is fun and funny. I have a good time watching this movie, a really good time. I think it's, like, for me, probably in the mid-80s. I'd give this movie a solid 4 out of 5.
No, this movie's not that good for me. I was with it for a while, and then it just got really boring, and I just couldn't wait for it to end.
How's it compared to Buckaroo?
In my eyes, it's the same movie. It's just a musical Buckaroo. It's basically what it is.
Buckaroo.
I was able to follow... I was able to follow the first Gogeta. Half of this movie, at least, okay. Which is more than I can say for Buckaroo. I'm going to give this a 2 out of 5, and it gets that 2 solely for Tim Curry's performance.
Okay, as for me, I'm kind of on the fence. I want to give this a light, low 3. If I give it a 2.5, maybe. I really do like those first few songs in this movie. And learning about the backstory and what the people do during the live show, that adds a lot to me. Like, I really like that concept. And watching it with that commentary and listening to the people, like, making fun of the characters. Because that's all they do is at the live show, that they're making fun of the movie while they're watching it. They're yelling at it. And
that's not the movie, though.
Exactly. So... you can't use that as your basis for whether or not this movie's good or not. We have to divorce it from that completely.
Yeah.
And as a movie, I don't think it works as a whole. I think like half of it works, right? The first half is really good, but then it overstays its welcome in a big, big way, right?
I think you're just not significantly evolved as a moviegoer.
Yeah, that's true. Either, absolutely right? True. But this is better than Buckaroo. I thought this was way better than Buckaroo.
Yeah.
Buckaroo put me to sleep. This is not that.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I'll give it a 3. I don't know.
Nice.
Different scores all around. Very polarizing.
There you go. Okay, let's read some listener mail. And we got 10 trillion emails this week. And all of them are a novel length.
We inspire greatness.
In our listeners, yeah. So let's see what we can do. Let's see how many of these we can get through. Gunny writes in. He wants to talk about the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Oh man, you're doing the Rocky Horror Picture Show? That's one of those movies which, for me, has been ruined. Not because of the movie itself, but because of the fandom that's grown up around it, which I'm sure you're talking about in this episode. When I was in college, my freshman year girlfriend was a big-time Rocky Horror fan, and I tried to be supportive by seeing the movie for the first time with her at a screening with her friends. Imagine my surprise and annoyance when I was the only person there in normal clothes. Everyone else bending genders so hard, they might as well have been Avatar Aangs of androgyny. I was going to make an Ember Island Players reference for Martin, but it was too obscure.
No, it's not.
The audience was so familiar with the movie that they talked a bunch, so I couldn't hear what the appeal was. And then they treated me as a quote-unquote virgin and made fun of me a lot, which is apparently what you do to a new viewer, like they are Brad or Janet. At first, I thought they were just kidding around, but a couple of them really enjoyed the bullying.
We gotta stop the bullying.
The bully.
I kind of got the impression that they felt like finally they could get one up on us normals. We're in a position where we were the ones in the minority, and that's sad. It wasn't so much that I couldn't get into the spirit of things with this movie. There are lots of movies that are good, but still don't get me going. I think I had a bad time and don't like this flick because, personally, when someone new joins a fandom I'm a part of, I want to make their experience as fun and painless as possible, but I just got made fun of for being a supposed square. Still, I hope you guys enjoy this movie and its copious amount of gender bending, and I want you to know that the Yes That Bad podcast is something I try to get my friends interested in with friendliness and cheer, not snobbery. I feel like you dudes want people of every color, creed, romantic preference, and even nationality to feel included, unless they make corn references, which is not allowed. By the way, if Emily Browning, Dennis Quaid, and Nicolas Cage are the patron saints of this enterprise, are you three their vice cardinals?
I hope so. I feel bad because it sounds like this guy got, I don't know, some people got a little out of line at the screening you went to.
That's what you're supposed to do, apparently. That's universal.
Yeah, but it's supposed to be, like, in fun, and they're supposed to feel like they're included. Like, they're not supposed to just be, like, bullied. Like, that's not
It's like, you're not joining the military, right? You're going to see some movie. I don't want to get hazed.
Yeah, you're trying to have a good time.
Faye writes in and says, "Hi, guys. I am a musician, and as a regular performer in operas, I laugh uproariously every time Joel says, Fidelio. Every opera I have ever been in has at least one dance, ball, or party scene for no reason, much like Kevin's favorite teen movie, She's All That." Anyway,
Kevin's favorite movie of all time.
I am currently in production on the opera Faust, in which the female lead is about to die, but due to a last-minute self-sacrifice, gains automatic access into heaven. As our Marguerite is lifted into heaven, I can't help but imagine her giving the devil the finger as she rises, much like in Constantine. Also, although our devil is no Peter Stormare, I will tell you he's a gentleman and a scholar, and I am sorry you guys can't meet him. Just thought I'd tell you guys how much I love the show and that you have at least one fan in the world of opera. P.S. Although I'm fairly certain there is no masquerade ball in the original production of the opera Fidelio, which does contain copious amounts of gender bending, I did stumble upon the website advertising a masquerade ball called Fidelio. Thought I'd share. And she has a link to it. FidelioTokyo.com. Two things about that. A, the Fidelio thing comes from Eyes Wide Shut. That's why I always say it, because Fidelio was the password to get into the secret masquerade ball sex orgy.
That's also the password we have to use to get into Yats at Bad World Headquarters.
Absolutely.
Sex orgy.
Yeah. And I also like the idea that two completely different people on two different sides of the world both emailed us with the phrase copious gender bending. Okay, Charlie writes in and says, "Hey guys, I'm a South Korean who loves your funny podcast. I'm proud to say that your podcast has reached the other side of the world. I also hope that this mail gets read before you guys record the next episode. I just want to say that these podcasts are the most funniest stuff I've ever heard, and I always listen to your episodes over and over again when I take the subway every morning. It's really hard just keeping a straight face when listening to you guys joking. I also want to say that Kevin is my favorite in this podcast, for some reason unknown to even myself. And my favorite episode would be Constantine, the most badass shit I ever saw with my two eyes. I watched that movie about 40 times now, and it still remains the best movie I ever saw."
Personal hero, by the way.
"And by the way, just want to ask one question to Kevin. I know that you're a European football fan like me. What is your favorite football club? I love Liverpool FC, but they suck these days, and it's really hard to watch sometimes."
Sure do.
"And by the way, Joel, I know you're a Battlestar fan. Who was your favorite actor? For me, James Olmos is the man. Love your podcast, guys. Keep it cool. P.S. I know I suck at writing English, so I hope you can read it no problem. P.P.S. Oh, by the way, I was raised in New Jersey when I was between 2 to 5. Okay, Kevin, are you sure you didn't write this email? Is this a pseudonym for you? I love Kevin, and I love European football.
No, but it sounds like I got a number one fan out there. I follow Arsenal, who are looking very good this year, despite losing Robin Van Persie.
Okay, as for your question about Battlestar Galactica, who my favorite actor was, that is a tough question, because there's a lot of good actors in that thing. I can tell you who my favorite character was. It was Romo Lampkin. He knows what I'm talking about. Okay, the next series of emails all have to do with our premium podcast episodes. For those sitting on the fence, you might want to check these out to figure out what the hell we're talking about here.
Wait, Joel, what are you talking about? What premium podcast?
Yeah, what's a premium podcast?
Yeah, it's that bad.bandcamp.com, where you can purchase our latest premium episodes, such as Indiana Jones and the Kingdom in the Crystal Skull and Avatar, The Last Airbender, for a mere $2.
Wait, $2? Do you just get a premium episode?
Okay, Ben writes in and says, "Hey guys, I was listening to your preview of the Indiana Jones podcast, and before I knew it, horrific memories were flashing before my mind, which prompted me to tell my sad tale. So in true Yes That Bad fashion, let's start with a flashback. In 2008, I was a very happy 15-year-old without a care in the world. It is until I found out that the new Indiana Jones movie was coming out on my 16th birthday. Immediately, I began preparing for what I thought was going to be a very memorable movie experience, that kind that you look back on and was proud to see in the theaters. So there it was, my big day. I was moving, I was grooving with the greatest of ease into the theater, and I can honestly say that if I would have died right then and there at that moment, I would have said I had a good existence on this earth, but that was not to be the case." And he goes on to talk about how much he hated Indiana Jones. Isn't it interesting that a 15-year-old, 16-year-old hated it? And he's talking about how it ruined his childhood and stuff.
That's interesting because, like, for me,
that's the kind of crap that our generation says.
Right.
He's in his childhood still.
I think there's another factor at play here that he should consider. He's in his 20s now, probably. But remember, when you're 15, 16, that's when everything sucks.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Well, we saw Lost in Space during that time period.
We did.
And remember how we said, like,
it sucked. But we saw it later and it still sucked, so.
So consider that, I know.
That movie's not gonna get better for him, though.
No, it's not.
It's just, the movie just sucks.
Okay. Well, Miles writes in, this is a different Miles than we're used to. Miles writes in and says, "Dear Joel, Martin, and Kevin, when I saw The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull in theaters opening night, I was flabbergasted by the fridge nuking scene. I wrote a paper in college detailing the fall of the Cold War, and during my research, I looked into hydrogen bombs. Temperatures at the hypocenter of an H-bomb explosion can get up to 300 million degrees Celsius. For comparison, the surface of the sun is about 5,500 degrees Celsius. Poor Indy would have been vaporized instantly by the heat, along with everything else in the vicinity. Say Indy survived the heat. Lead is not 100% effective at blocking gamma radiation and x-rays. Even if the lead on that fridge was an inch thick, he'd still suffer some radiation burns. And last, at the very, very least, that fall would have ruptured some of his organs, besides his tense, muscly body. Dr. Jones had no padding whatsoever. I can't help nitpicking stupid crap in movies, and many movies have been ruined because of it. Thanks. You guys are the best podcasters I've ever heard, and you make my commute to work more enjoyable." Okay, DJ Clive writes in, and I'm going to say that this story is a little more Martin-centric than anything else. He wants to talk about Action Park.
Yeah. All right.
"I was overjoyed to hear you guys mention Action Park. I used to love that place. I almost died there. I was swimming in the wave pool, you know, the one with all the empty bottles floating in it, when a giant wave smacked me into the concrete wall, almost knocking me out. Luckily, the pool ladder was right there, but I was so weak and flaccid from the impact, all I could do was make futile grabs for it as the waves tossed me back and forth. Finally, a lifeguard grabbed me by the hand and helped me out of the water. When you look back at it all, it's amazing how long that place stayed in business and how more people didn't die there."
I mean, only 7 people died there, right?
Better.
7 or 8. It is a miracle that more people did not die there.
Okay, Tom writes in and says, "Hey guys, thanks for the After Dark episode based all around Atlantic City. Yes, that bad.bandcamp.com. Download today." That actually is a really good episode, though. I'm getting a lot of commentary about it. People really like this one. "Thanks for the After Dark episode based all around Atlantic City. I hate Atlantic City as much as all of you. The difference is, I used to live and work there. Martin's description of it being a bedlam of despair, filth, and misery is spot on. Some lovely things that happened to me during my time living there were my car being broken into for the change in the ashtray. Couldn't have been more than $3. Having to stay at the casino I worked at during Hurricane Irene with the same sleeping arrangements as Martin and Joel, except that with people I didn't know and was randomly assigned. A woman dropping things onto my apartment balcony from 4 floors up since she thought it was quicker than taking it down the elevator. And finally, having my leg break through a board on the boardwalk as I went for a run. Those things took 2 nanoseconds to think of, so I'm sure there's more. I think as you drive into Atlantic City, your soul starts out looking like the Cadillac of Men, Sylvester Stallone. And by the time you get there, it looks like the Crypt Keeper. And then that happens in reverse as you leave, explaining Martin's miraculous recovery. Okay, Wesley writes in and says, "Oh, Martin, this one's for us. Have any of you driven down the famous Clinton Road or Shades of Death Road in New Jersey?"
Oh, man, have we've done that many, many times. I think everybody... Yeah.
All right, this requires some explanation. Okay, in New Jersey, we have a magazine called Weird New Jersey. It's been published for years, and it just amasses all the folk legends and folklore and all the scary stories, all the crazy stuff, weird places, haunted houses, all that crazy crap that's in New Jersey, because apparently there's billions of them. This is a crazy state. There is a road in New Jersey called Clinton Road where so many things have happened. KKK rituals, UFO sightings, Satan worshippers, murders, you name it has happened on this road. So
it's
many,
just, it's, they it's had, just a bad...
Yeah, they expanded it to its own offshoot book, just of all Clinton Road stories. It's nearby.
I mean, yeah.
It's just a road.
It's just a road. It's 10 miles from here. Me and my brother were not really drag racing, but racing these kids. And it's a narrow, swervy road. And my brother threw a sculpture that I had in the back of my car out of my car through the kid's open window as he was yelling, and it hit the driver in the face. And he swerved and almost crashed his car.
What kind of statue was it?
It was when we were in college. I forget what it was.
Was that head?
Yes! Yes, it like hit him!
I think it was like a solid rock. Tim writes in and says, "I'm emailing you from Copenhagen, Denmark. After a glorious summer that lasted all but 3 weeks, the weather is now back to being cold and rainy. As a result, I've caught the flu and have been stuck in bed for the last 5 days, wallowing in my own chaotic, insecure delusions. I was bored, so I went back and started listening to all the older episodes again, even found the infamous gamer episode. There are many hidden gems in these earlier shows. I also felt bad for Kevin having had the ending of Man on Fire spoiled by his wife. Speaking of spoiled, a drunk guy at a bar once told me, 'Don't read the Bible, bro. He dies in the end.'" He's looking out. He has a question for us. Dennis Quaid, Nicolas Cage, and Val Kilmer. You have to marry one, have sex with one, and kill one. Here's a twist. You have to work together and pick one each, meaning one of you gets the Cage, the other gets the Quaid, and while the last one is left with Fat Kilmer. You now have to decide who gets to marry, who gets to have sex with, and who gets to kill. Choose you must, my minions. What's it gonna be?
I want
to
marry Quaid.
I'm gonna kill Cage.
Kill Cage? How could... Impossible. He'd kill you first.
Oh, please.
No, Cage would kill you, dude.
Please.
You're out of your league.
Please.
What do you think with Kilmer?
We're gonna go to get some food together, you know? He'd like that. Joel writes in with a little story for Kevin here.
You wrote in?
I did, yeah.
Wow.
With me. Okay, he says, "So you mentioned Swim Fan in the latest episode, so I gotta drop this story on you. I saw this movie in the theater with an ex. Halfway through the film, I felt her body stiffen. She slaps my hand away, looks at me, and says, 'You've been cheating on me, haven't you?' I have no idea how she put it together from this piece of shit film, but I was caught dead to rights and fessed up. Worst part was, she made us sit through the rest of the film. Longest movie ever. Side note for you, I received one of the biggest black eyes in the history of man after we walked out. Totally earned it, 100%. Kevin, how do you think she did it? Was that movie about cheating?
I don't remember. I think my brain naturally erased all the memory of that movie. Yeah, I don't even remember what the movie was about, to be honest with you. It was miserable, though. But I saw it in theaters.
Okay, Morgan writes in and says, "I know you guys are really big into Wes Anderson films. All smart people should. The question I have for you is this. Where does Moonrise Kingdom rank amongst his other works?"
It's second in my list. I put Life Aquatic at the top, then I go Moonrise Kingdom, then I go Royal Tenenbaums.
Royal Tenenbaums, Mr. Fox, Life Aquatic, Moonrise Kingdom, Darjeeling.
Darjeeling I put at the bottom. Mr. Fox is probably right below Royal Tenenbaums for me.
Rushmore is my number one. Fantastic Mr. Fox, number two. I'm going to say Moonrise Kingdom's number three. I have to rewatch Tenenbaums, though. It's been a long time since I've seen that.
And finally, Joe writes in with a very disturbing story he heard in the news that he thought that we should know about, especially you, Martin.
Oh, all right.
Okay. A couple of weeks ago, I saw this story on the news that made me sick. Apparently, some dude was drunk and drove his car over a bridge, and his girlfriend was in the trunk, pregnant with his kid, and in the car, they found a tape, but the police didn't say who it was to. Come to think of it, his name, it was you. Damn. Ha 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 Bravo.
Oh, man. I'm going to have trouble sleeping tonight. I'll probably dream about it. Won't be able to eat without it.
Okay, thanks for those emails, guys. If you want to contact us, you can reach us at yeahitsthatbad@gmail.com. Now it's time for the question of the week. And the question comes in from Martin. That's great. Okay, Martin writes in and says, what movies have you seen that have been completely ruined by the trailers? For me, it was Men in Black. That showed every single alien in the trailer, and Dread, which shows the end of the freaking movie. I didn't like that Paranormal Activity 1 showed the ending, and the whole time when I was watching the movie, I'm like, okay, when's that scene coming? When's that scene coming? When's that scene coming? I'm just waiting for it. And when it finally came, it was like the last shot in the movie. I hated that.
What you just described happened to me with The Gray. There was a scene in that I just kept waiting for and waiting for, and it was the very end of the movie.
Okay, head on over to yeahitsthatbad.com. Leave a comment on this episode's page with your answer. Okay, now it's time to announce next week's movie, and we're gonna take another dip back into the slasher movie territory with an old classic I like to call Urban Legend.
How is that a classic? In what world is that a classic?
In the Yes That Bad universe. Okay, tune in next week and we'll be watching Urban Legend.
I didn't think anyone even remembered that movie existed.
I remember that movie.
What the hell was the name of that one movie where people were dying over Instant Messenger? That's what I think of when I think of Urban Legend. Is it like Cry Wolf or some crap?
Never
like
Cry Wolf?
I don't know.
I just remember in the trailer, it kept making the Instant Messenger noise over and over and over again.
I don't remember.
What's that one movie where people had their picture taken in Instagram, and then it showed how they died, and then they did die? Say cheese and die.
It's Goosebumps.
Oh.
Okay, I have some important announcements to make before the end of the podcast. Several announcements. First and foremost, by the time this episode comes out, it'll be October 1st or 2nd or whatever. The annual podcast awards will be opening their nominations, right? It's always been my dream as a prenatal fetus to win a podcast award. Even when I was in my mom's womb, I was dreaming about having a podcast award.
I remember one day you came up to me when we were in high school and you're like, Kevin, I really want to win a podcast award. And I was like,
What's a podcast?
No, you were talking about this since 1982.
Go to www.podcastawards.com. and nominate Yeah, It's That Bad for the film category. Even if we don't win, it's still good to be nominated for this stuff because it'll help us get new listeners. Because I've listened to podcasts based on the nomination of this thing. It's really hard to win because you're up against people like Doug Loves Movies, who has 10 trillion Twitter followers that vote for him. But if we can get nominated, that'd be great.
Yeah.
So www.podcastawards.com. Nominate Yeah, It's That Bad for the film category. Try to get our name out there. Help us out. That is announcement number one. Announcement number two is our sponsorships are finally starting to pay off.
Oh, yeah. Feeling pretty good right now.
Right, Kevin?
Hopefully, we sound a little better.
Yeah, I hope. We recorded this all on brand new equipment. And it's all thanks to you, our dear listeners.
We were finally able to put Baby Behringer
to bed.
Nice. Yeah.
Now the equipment only takes up 64 square feet instead of 128 square feet as it used to.
I mean, yeah, sure. We did have to hook up a lot of water cooling plumbing to this equipment to cool it down. And the headquarters is still 2 trillion degrees.
No, but all the equipment that we ordered arrived this morning. So some growing pains. We're going to have to figure out how to fully get all the juice out of this. But we are no longer in Behringer land. That's it. Hopefully there isn't any more buzzing or popping or any of that crazy crap. I hope. Cross my fingers. We'll see what happens. But this is all thanks to you. Thank you for sponsoring the episodes. If it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be able to upgrade our equipment. So thank you. Want to have a little transparency here at Yes, That Bad World headquarters. Let people know what's going on behind the scenes.
Absolutely. I mean, of course, they can. If they're a shareholder, they get our quarterly report.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, By law, we have to
write that up and give it to them.
I don't know. Maybe I'll write a blog post or something detailing the trials and tribulations I had with the previous equipment. I don't know. Maybe one person on the planet might want to read about that. I don't know.
You might be overestimating.
Yeah, you're right. Half of a person might want to read that. Okay, and announcement number three. It's a bit of a bad note, actually. It's downer. Sad note. People have been asking us to put the premium podcasts on iTunes, and we went through the steps to do that, but there's a little bit of a... A little bit of a snafu, a little mess up.
Bump in the road.
My butterfinger slipped and I zigged when I should have zagged. Next time I'll zog and maybe I'll do it right. But I accidentally clicked the wrong setting, right? I set the episode to go on sale for $2. And that's what it's being sold on. It's on the Google Play store right now.
Uh-huh.
$2. So if you want to download our premium podcast on your Android phone with Google Play, go ahead. $2. No big deal. But if you want to go on iTunes, that's where the problem happened. Apparently, you have to be really specific with your settings. Because of the length of the episode, iTunes automatically raised the price from $2 to $10. And that's set in stone. There's nothing I can do to change it. So, whoops. So the podcast is on iTunes, but it's for $10. So, great. We're not price gouging you. It's just that I was an idiot and I made a mistake. So, in the future, hopefully we'll figure out how to do this right.
Are we sure it's not because Apple takes 300% of the profits?
That's that's probably right.
They're like, we're going to charge $1. They want $9.
but there you go. That's like the down note. So to recap, tune in next week. We'll be watching Urban Legend. Please nominate us for the 2012-13 whatever podcast awards. www.podcastawards.com. We got all our new equipment in. Thank you to all our sponsors. I'm blowing kisses at you through the internet.
It looks like you're just blowing them at me.
And finally, the episodes are available to download on Google Play and the iTunes Store, but they're grossly overinflated on iTunes. So you can, if you really want to help out the show, hey,
go for it.
Yeah, who could use those $10, but those people who are on their Android phones can now download it on Google Play for $2. Everybody else, please continue downloading it from yasthatbad.bandcamp.com. By the way, the reason that we do it on Bandcamp as opposed to the other places is because everybody else takes a huge cut and it costs money to be on iTunes. So it's money out of my pocket. I can feel Steve Jobs' ghost pickpocketing me the whole time.
It's not the first time he's been in your pants.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, sweet.
Okay, thanks for listening to the show. If you like what you've heard, please consider subscribing. We have a new episode every Tuesday. Please leave us a positive review on iTunes. Those 5-star reviews really do help with the show. Please help spread the word of the show to all your friends by liking us on Facebook. Facebook.com/yeahitsthatbad. You can follow the show on Twitter @yeahitsbad. You can follow Martin @yeahitsmartin. You can follow Kevin @yeahitskev. And you can listen to the show on all your mobile devices via Stitcher. You can get that at stitcher.com. Once again, thanks for listening to the show. See you next time.
I'm scared to go see it in a theater now. I don't want to be marked with a scarlet letter on my forehead.
You don't want people pointing at, calling you a virgin?
No.
Yelling at you? Yeah, I'm not in high school anymore. I don't need that joke.
But would you go and throw toast at people?
What if powdered toast man was there?
I have to go.
Well, I'd go anywhere that powdered toast man was going to be attempted.
Yeah, powdered toast man shows up and tells you to do anything, you do it, right?
Grab his butt cheeks, fly away?
Absolutely.
Yeah, look, if it's good enough for the Pope, I'm doing it.
There you go.